Before we get started with this next episode, if you'd like to support the podcast, please visit anchor.fm/Lilith's Left Hand. There are links for the new website, lilithsleftand.com, where you can follow the blog and any other happenings at Lilith's Left Hand. You can share on various social media through the Anchor site, and please consider subscribing there at any of your favorite podcatchers, and rate and review us if the opportunity exists for you. Anything you can do to support the show would be greatly appreciated. Take good care of yourself.
Welcome back to Lilith's Left Hand Podcast. We're really excited to be back. This is Jessica talking, and I'm here with the new birthday girl, Emma.
Hello, everyone.
It was just your birthday?
Yes, on Sunday.
Are you one of those people that is like, I don't celebrate birthdays, or I'm really into my birthday, or what?
A bit of both. So, like, really, it's just another day, but I'm not going to lie, I love presents. So, you know, and Darren, my partner, always gets me really good presents because I'm one of those annoying people where I don't know if it's just like a hangover from always being, I call it like a poverty mindset. So, like, if I see a book I like and that I want and I look at the price and it's like £10, I'm like, oh no, I'll just buy that another time. And like, Darren's like, sure, just get it. So then I always get like really nice books as gifts.
That's so great. It's also easier to give gifts to people that like want things.
Yes.
That are, you know, like a lot of times people are always want such huge things. You know what I mean? Like, I want a new fireplace. This is a personal thing. I want a fireplace in my house. Ours doesn't work. That's expensive. That's a lot of money.
I used to work with a lady who, like, I swear to God, one year she was excited because she got a pan set. I'm like, if anyone ever buys me a pan set for my birthday, you better run because I'm going to throw it at you.
It's funny because, like, if Paul came home and got me, like, a nice Dutch oven, like, ours – I want a different an additional Dutch oven because I use ours so much, but they cost so much money. I would actually be so excited if he got me like a new Dutch oven. I'm such a dork. So because I hear people say stuff like that, like my mom, I remember one year was super mad at my dad because he got her a vacuum for her birthday.
Like, oh my God,
what an asshole! But I would. I'm like, I could think of certain things like that I would get that would be cleany that I would be stoked. Like if I had a tiny little like hand vacuum to clean the studio.
Yeah.
I would love it. So I guess it just depends. And so like it's the thoughtfulness. He's getting you really thoughtful presents.
Yes.
And I think that's really the way we should all do things. But I don't. So I don't. Know why I say that. I'm horrible at buying gifts. I never get gifts. I always forget. I will get gifts for people randomly because I think of them and then send them. That's it.
But well, that's like, nice too.
Yeah.
It's nice to get random gifts.
I think I might. I swear, this is embarrassing to admit, but I think it might be a part of my contrarian nature. But I'm like, we're not celebrating when you tell me to celebrate. I will think of you and then send you a thoughtful present. Like, I need a little bit more manners. Well, we are not here to talk about our birthdays, actually.
Yeah, but we're here to talk about exciting shit still.
Yes. Happy birthday, Emma. Thank you. And also, happy fall. Happy autumn.
I know. Autumn is the best. Like, the actual best.
Yeah, it's my favorite season, absolutely, for sure, since all of my whole life. I grew up in a place that was really beautiful for fall, and it's pretty here too. I can see, I've been watching a tree right out the studio window turn various shades of red, and now it's at the darkest, last shade. Yeah, and it's about to fall. And I've been really enjoying the blueberry leaves are getting orange, red, and rusty. The colors are changing.
Yes, it's so beautiful. But, like, you know, the big thing for me is obviously Halloween and Samhain.
Yes, we have a lot to do in the fall. So yes, it's beautiful and there's a lot going on. So we want to talk about a couple things, like some secular autumn festivities and some more spiritual autumn festivities.
Yes, because, like, the thing is, there's so much that goes on at this time of year. So one of the things I recommend for people to do if they're interested in looking up, like, the origins of the different celebrations is to find a good book. And one of my favourites is The Stations of the Sun by Ronald Hutton. Now, it does have a British focus, but it does cover most of, like, the Sabbats that are on the wheel of the year. But I really like it is because he breaks it down into, like, what happens where. So you see different snapshots of similar celebrations, but, like, I really like the differences in between all of those. And it's really good.
Is it different countries or different places within?
Well, it's just Britain.
England. Okay.
Yeah, the British Isles. Yeah. But, like, most of the, the wheel of the year, most of the Sabbats are taken from, like, Celtic kind of belief.
Yes.
Or celebration. So, you know, it's quite interesting, even if you're not British.
And this current Wheel of the Year time that we're celebrating here is Samhain.
Yes. I can
Samhain?
No. As we all once called it. We all once called it that.
Funny, because I feel like I've seen people roll their eyes when they say it wrong, when other people say it wrong. And I'm like, are you
kidding?
We've
all done it.
We don't all know how to speak.
Yeah. And, you know, there's that really good quote. I don't know who said it and I can't remember. So if anyone does know, then please remind me who. But I think it goes something along the lines of,
my mind's gone blank. Don't judge people for not knowing shit. That's so bitchy.
No, but that is also good. I think it's like you shouldn't judge. Oh, that's it. You shouldn't judge someone for mispronouncing a word because it shows that they learned that word from a book.
Yeah. And
because let's face it, some of the words are like hard to pronounce.
I moved to Portland a long time ago, mm-hmm. and I moved there from Pennsylvania, and I'd only visited. I didn't know Portland, and I moved there, and there is a river, and it's called the Willamette, but it looks like Willamette, you guys.
Yeah.
And so 20 years ago, I didn't know how to say it, and I said Willamette, and someone was so rude to me about how like that is not how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
Like, dude, I just moved here. Like, it would have been nice if you were teaching me how to say it properly so that I could, you know.
Ass.
Yeah. So, like, I think that we should all remember that people are in different phases of learning. And Samhain.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's Samhain.
Yes.
But it's, we get it.
So, yeah.
But now you know. There. And, like, just like I don't say Willamette still, I say Willamette like a normal person. We can all say Samhain.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, as we were saying, like many of the other Sabbats in the Wheel of the Year, its origins are Celtic, particularly Irish and Scottish when we talk about Celtic. And, you know, it's most of us are really familiar with it. So by autumn and spring are relatively modern inventions. So, like, back in the day, and in the day I'm talking, like, pre-medieval, Ireland and generally the world, there was summer and winter. So Samhain marks the end of summer and the beginning of winter, or as most people are probably familiar with, the, you know, as we come to this time of the year, we're into the dark half of the year, you know. So yeah, so that's the origins.
I love basically. It. I am my ancestral origins are also Irish and Scottish, and that is why I'm allergic to the sun. But I get really excited about looking at the wheel of the year because I think that a lot of us living in, now at least for my most of my life, mm-hmm. I was not very in tune with seasons because I never had air conditioning, but I just recently got it. It's amazing. But anyway, we have air conditioning, we have heaters, we have cars. And so sometimes I think we forget about the seasons, and then we have food that is produced somewhere else and sent to us.
Carry on.
Oh, it's okay. Yeah. Us what it's like, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I was only going to say that actually the wheel of the year itself as a concept is fairly modern too, if we're looking at it like in terms of paganism and witchcraft. It's a fairly modern invention, you know, and I think that's why some people have favourite Sabbaths, some have some that don't really mean anything to them because, you know, for various reasons, a lot of which, you know, a lot of us are far removed from the agricultural year in which those celebrations are based. But for me, and like my animistic beliefs and practices, you know, there's ways you can kind of combine the will of the year and animism in terms of like connection to the land and noticing the differences in the seasons and all of that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. It's like the connection to the land, the connection to animals, everything that lives on the land is also, whenever I say connection to the land, I also mean
and everything.
Everything that is on. Same. There, right?
Yes.
And so it is like, because I think, you know, because it's more modern, mm-hmm. it's easier for us to like digest getting it, like the idea of it, because it's not going from like rewilding completely, right?
Yeah.
We still have agriculture where we're cultivating food and you know what I mean? So it's like slowly getting back into that cycle of that, birth and death and rebirth and all of that over and over again, cyclically through the year, which people have always
absolutely
lived seasonally. And so I think it's cool because it eases us back in.
Yeah, it really does. It is one of my favorite times, I'm not gonna lie. And I think, like I always say, so I'm writing a book at the moment, and I talk about that at this time of the year it's good to, if you like beginning to start a spirit work practice, and not just with, you know, at this time of year our minds automatically go to like the ancestors and the spirits of the dead, but in the same way as the veil is thinning, you know, we all hear that term thrown about, but in the same way that those kind of spirits perhaps can feel stronger at this time of year, it's the same for like the genius loci, nature spirits and spirits of the land and all of that kind of stuff. And so I always encourage people to try and get out at this time because it's beautiful as well. So it's a win-win.
And do you think the veil is thinner at this time?
I don't really know. And I think I say that because as an animist, for me, spirit work is quite a large part of my witchcraft practice. And when I say spirit work, it looks like a lot of different things. It's not like, you know, what you might imagine. It's lots of different things and lots of different practices. But I don't know if they feel stronger at this time or, you know, our culture and all the layers of it and from right back from farming. So, you know, it's classed as the third harvest. It's a harvest festival, Samhain is. It's the third harvest, which is the blood harvest. So, like, at this time of year, you know, the farmers traditionally would have started to look at the herd to cull not only enough meat to last them through the year, but they'd be looking at those animals that would be weak or too old that maybe wouldn't last and might take up resources such as food and money. You know, they'd be culled as well. You know, the ones that probably wouldn't make it through the winter. And so all of those layers, so that, and then, you know, our own modern perceptions. I don't know whether we just condition our mind more that the veil is thinning at this time of the year.
Yeah, it's like the time of the year that you're allowed to think it or something. It's like the time of the year where we collectively agree that spirits exist and we can contact them, but for the rest of the year, it doesn't. Or not that it doesn't, but we just don't focus on it. It's like the only... So because I was wondering the same thing. I was like, is it really? Because if you have a regular practice and you work with spirit on a daily basis, it's not like then the veil is thin all the time for you, right? And so then I was like, well, why do they say it? I couldn't figure out why they say it. And now I feel kind of like because we all collectively think about it and we're all generating the idea that that is a possibility, then it is more available to everybody, even if you don't do a practice. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, you can see it across cultures as well, because there's, like, you know, throughout the year in lots of different places, there are various rituals and celebrations that celebrate some aspect of death or the spirit world. And I think particularly at this time of the year, if you look at, you know, like the Day of the Dead in Mexico, and then you've got Figide in countries that practice voodoo, you know, there's lots of different celebrations that occur at this time that center around, you know, death, dying, the harvest. So there's all of those things as well. So I don't know. It's interesting though.
I love it. I think it's very interesting. I mean, it makes sense that you would have like kind of death celebrations at the time of the end of the harvest, at the time of the beginning of winter, where everything is.
Yeah, it's so, death is so visible. So perhaps that could be an aspect of it as well. You know, all around, death is visible. You know, we can feel it.
And we're 3D, we're here as people in this physical body looking around at these physical manifestations. And so now that we're not, I'm just thinking this.
No, I like it.
We're talking about it. But now that we're not, so like before we were doing it outside, we noticed from the weather, from the, all those changes, and that way these other larger kind of older religious or spiritual holidays were coming, and then and now we don't have that much of the same outside sense, so we fill it up with a lot of the Halloween, or you know what I mean, the inside stuff.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because although most of us are like so far removed from the agricultural year, but we actually still rely on all of that to feed us, so we're not as far removed as we perhaps think we are from it. And I don't know, I suppose for most of us in Western, industrialized, rich nations, you know, we don't have to worry so much about famine or, you know, how we're going to last the winter because we've got brightly lit supermarkets that we can go and buy food at. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. But they were grown somewhere. Yeah.
But I still think the need to like do all that other secular stuff, like the Halloweeny stuff and all that. I don't know. Perhaps that's us, some kind of pang of our ancestral connection to the land at this time. Who knows?
Well, it just the one thing that you said made me think of, like, I totally get that where people are like, well, your food just can come from the grocery store and like you can make it inside. We have lights. We have all this growing stuff. We can just make fast food available to people. But like when you start gardening, which I have not done all my life, I'm new to it. So, I mean, and you eat the food out of your garden, ripe, fresh tomatoes. Are you kidding?
There's nothing like them.
Oh my God. Like, of course we can get those other kinds of tomatoes. And we can sustain ourselves with the calories, but there is so much other stuff that you're getting in your food. And I'm not talking about just that it tastes good. Like there's a lot of other stuff going on there that you're feeding your act, you know, yourself in that way. That's another reason I think that like the wheel of the year is helpful for us remembering, because we start kind of living in that rewilding part.
Yeah, but I think like most things, you have to actually be an active participant of it, you know. I mean, don't get me wrong, like there's lots of beautiful imagery and art and all of that stuff that depict the wheel and the various Sabbaths, but and all of that is lovely and, you know, but you, as we always say, you actually have to be an active participant. Otherwise, because by being an active participant, you're actually developing your own practice, obviously, but you're also starting to build that connection to the spirit of the land. And then that's when the wheel of the year can, or the Sabbats that you find you are naturally drawn to, then they start becoming more meaningful, you know. And that, for me, is like where it starts becoming something a little bit deeper.
Yeah, it's like getting your hands dirty. Not only is it you connecting to the earth, but also you're like getting microbes and other things from the earth that then are getting, like letting your kids eat a little bit of dirt is not going to kill them. It's actually really good for you.
Uh-huh. Like
in that connection in all kinds of ways. So you can read about this stuff all you want, but until you like go and really get in there and introduce it into your system and kind of have a better relationship with it, then it means something then it just means so much more.
Yes. But like, so, you know, Samhain is everyone's favorite. Let's not lie. Who doesn't like it? It's just the best.
Yeah, because everything about it is great. Harvest. Like right now is my favorite foods. Like kabocha squash is coming out. Like all of these like really hearty things. And then all of a sudden I'm hungry for meat. You wouldn't know. But like, and I just realized like fall, winter is the time that I want to eat meat. And we haven't been eating a lot of meat. And all of a sudden it got really cold and I've been eating a lot of pumpkin. And I was like, oh, meat. And it made me think of what you were talking about earlier. It's like, oh, yeah, this is like the time of year where meat happens. And I just thought it was interesting that people can actually live in that way still today.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting, you know. But for me, Samhain is like not the most spiritual, I suppose, of the Sabbats, but I don't know, it's one that I just like, because a lot of the things that are common practice at Samhain are part of my normal practice anyway, so it kind of makes it more accessible and I get to talk about like a lot of the topics that interest me. So I like
what do you mean, what common Samhain things?
Sorry, can you say that again?
What common Samhain things, like what are some common Samhain?
Well, just like activities.
And activities, just... yeah.
Okay, so a dumb supper is like one of my favourite things to do. You can do it any time over like the Samhain, All Souls, all of that, like any time during this. Because for me personally, I hate being a stickler for times and dates. Like if I can, great. And for the most part, I do tend to like stick to timings and dates for things where possible, but sometimes life gets in the way. But then I think sometimes people can let that get in the way of them doing the actual thing, because they think, oh no, the time's passed now, I've missed it was last night, so I can't do it tonight. Oh well, I won't do it, I'll wait till next year. No, just do the thing. So that's what I mean,
even if
I say
it's not the what you deemed the perfect time.
Yeah, because yeah. You know, so yeah, just do the thing regardless of timing. And so I'm not a massive stickler for that. But so like I said, a dumb supper, I'll put my teeth back in. A dumb supper can be held. I'm sorry. Do you guys say that over there? It's just like an English saying. I guess it's English. Mm-mm. Oh. It's when you like, your words get all jumbled up and it's like your false teeth have fallen out, so you have to put them back in.
I was like, I totally got what you meant, but it makes me laugh because we don't actually say that. I would say more like tongue-tied.
Oh, okay.
Or something. And that's why I thought, that's why I was like, oh, that's so funny. I wonder if people will listen and go, did her teeth fall out? And I was like, no,
no, she has, my teeth are all mine.
Or it's just funny because it's a different way of saying it. So yes. Sorry, I didn't mean
no, to. No, that's okay. So no. But yeah, so a dumb supper can be held anytime over like the dark half of the year. So they're really weird because they're held in complete silence. Complete silence. So the first two I ever went to were held by my friends. They're a couple, and they invited like some of us from the local moot, which is like a social kind of pagan / occult meetup. So they invited a few of us, and so you go in, and beforehand they send like a little email, and it's got all the instructions on, because you know when you normally go and visit someone and you go to their house and they go, oh, come in, what would you like to drink, oh, you need to pop to the loo, and you go, oh, where's your toilet, and so you can't do any of that stuff. So they send out a really good like information email saying, you know, you had to like say what drinks you wanted when on arrival and with your meal, any dietary like needs, all of that kind of stuff, where the toilet was. So when you turn up, like it's absolute silence from the moment you arrive. So already, like, you knock at the door and already you feel kind of that it's different. It's such a poignant experience. So, and it was such a nice experience the way they set it up. So while they were setting the table and finishing the meal, and of course in silence, us guests were in the living room, and there was like a fire, an open fire, and a little cauldron, and they'd left pieces of paper so you could make like little messages for your beloved dead, and you could burn them with herbs, and it was really nice. Beautiful. Yeah, it's beautiful. And then they summon you to the table with a bell, and you have your own place, but the head of the table is reserved for our beloved dead. So you're dining with the dead, essentially. So like you bring a little memento, like a photograph, or it could be anything, you know, anything that reminds you of that person or is a link to that person, and you place it at the head of the table that's reserved for the beloved dead, and then you eat your meal in silence, and it's just really, really good, and just really poignant. And I urge everyone to try it at least once, because it's so weird. We're not used to like shutting up and just not saying anything. But that's a massive part of being able to like connect with spirit, whatever huge kind of spirit. So
I think that's really cool that you guys do that. I want it ever since you taught me about it or told me about it. I've wanted to do one.
You should totally do one, because you don't have to have it as a social thing.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean?
Right now it would be with my family.
Yeah.
And I have three very young daughters who I love them so much. They talk so much. I talk so much. So they're just like me. And that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot of me.
Yeah. But there's like ways around it as well. So for example, this year I'm hosting one, and it's only going to be a small one. It's only going to be for like me and one of my sisters. And I live in a house full of people. And although they're like all adults, like my partner and my two sons, it just, life happens. It's, you know, when you're trying to be quiet, you realize then how noisy you actually are, or how noisy like a house full of people is, even when they're not necessarily being noisy.
Oh, okay. Because so, thinking about forcing my kids to do it with me, and that seemed impossible. That's like, it's so, like the way that you're saying it, I was like, oh my gosh, Emma, I hadn't even considered just doing it, me and Paul, or me and a friend,
yeah,
and then just allowing them to go watch a movie. I hadn't even considered it. Well, what I'm going to do
for me and my sister is, so I'm looking that I've got quite a large garden. I live like, I live on like an end plot, and so my garden spans like the front and back of my home. And so what I'm going to do is we're going to have like an outdoor picnic type.
Oh my gosh.
With, it's going to be all lovely and pretty with like candles and an altar, and obviously the ancestors will have an elaborate setup. They won't be like, you know, picnicking off a blanket. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So we're going to do it that way, and it'll be outside. So although there might be like random noises outside, but it's going to be still very quiet. There's only going to be me and her in my back garden's enclosed, so it's going, you know, it's still going to have that feeling, that intimacy.
Oh, that sounds really great.
So there's many ways around
it. Everybody listening, this is why Emma and I are friends. Because, like, I don't think of, like, unless you talk about some of the stuff out loud, mm-hmm. you know, you don't, I'm always just thinking from my own brain. And I never considered doing it outside or, in, you know what I mean? I'm just like, well, I guess if you're in this house, you're doing it down the cover. thank you. And also, the really important part that I think I also wouldn't have thought of that you guys clearly have done before is, like, I like the idea of sending somebody an email and giving them all the information and all the stuff. It's like when you leave and you leave the pet sitter everything. You know what I mean? Like, I would probably – I'm the one that would forget that, and people would be like, what do I do? And I was like, you're going to have to figure it out. But I say it with my eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. I'm glad that you're talking about it so that when people say they want to do it, that they're also remembering that there's a little bit more thought than just saying.
Yeah. And so, like, the food that you serve, for example. So I honor, like, all of my ancestors. So as a mixed race woman, I try and have, like, food that represents both of, you know, my parents' heritages. So, like, there'll be Jamaican dishes, there'll be typically English dishes. But there's a way, like, you don't want to spend ages, or perhaps you do, but I don't want to spend ages slaving away over stuff. So I often might do, like, a fusion meal. So, for example, like, the main course might be a traditional roast or, like, peas and rice and peas, for example, and then the dinner, the pudding might be something different. Do you know what I mean? So
so
you put a lot of thought into, like, the food, because, you know, you want to feed your ancestors. You're inviting them to come and dine with you. You're honoring them. They are your guests of honor, so it's really important that they're treated as such.
I love that idea. I do an ancestor altar, and we leave little things for them all the time. And it's usually like, or if we're having, like, for example, if we get a really good watermelon, we always put that downstairs for Paul's grandpa. Or, you know, if we get a really good, you know, this thing or that thing, or if I make, like, a really good pot roast with sauerkraut, I'll put that down there. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But I haven't actually sat and done a quiet meal with my ancestors.
And
I,
you know, it is like a very elaborate offering, but, like, everyone should just do it. And then, like, you'll know what I mean when it's just so different. The not talking thing really heightens. It's like it heightens all the other, like, senses, just being quiet. It's weird. You just have to experience it. It's good.
I think for a lot of people that don't have the practice of sitting every day in silence, this is another good way to kind of, like, not force yourself, but expose yourself to the kind, like, the way your mind changes when you're in silence and you're trying to do spiritual work. If we don't have all that noise behind us when we're doing spiritual work, what does it feel like differently? Yeah. So just try it and see what it feels like.
So, yeah. So a dumb supper is like an elaborate, it's an elaborate thing. Even a simple one requires, like, planning, and it requires you setting aside enough time that you can prepare the food, serve the food, eat the food without it being rushed, because you don't want to rush it. So even a simple one takes a lot of time in terms of preparation and effort. And I like doing that because I like the ritual side of witchcraft. I like all of witchcraft. Sometimes I just want to do something really simple and folksy. Other times I want to do a full on, like, the ritual experience. And so, you know, I like a dumb supper for that kind of feeling, you know, a big kind of event. I like that.
Yeah. And it reminds me of the, Well, we, I'm saying this as like a society, yeah. and I'm speaking from my personal experience, you know, we'll go all out in doing things for outside experiences. Mm-hmm. Even ones that don't give us anything back.
Yeah.
But we tend to phone it in on inside experiences, the ones that actually feed ourselves. So like you'll go all out doing a party or doing something for work, something that other people are going to see because yeah. other people are going to see it. So you got to put your best foot forward for yeah. other people. But we don't always really put that same effort into the things that are for ourselves. And so it's a nice reminder, like, you know, going out to something where you're going to see a lot of people and you want to look nice. So that's why you do it.
Yeah.
But then doing a dinner with your ancestors in your garden, maybe you could do the same thing so that you feel good about going into that space. Like you feel like you're totally prepared. And to have a nice time. And so I think that's, and no one sees it, no one but you and no one but spirit. And it's still totally valid.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then, but then I know other people who don't like all of that, what they might term pomp and ceremony, you know? And so for me, and what I tend to do for throughout this, what I term a season is, I tend to do lots of little things throughout it that culminates in the kind of dumb supper. And then and then you go back, because those little things are part of my everyday practice anyway. So although I do them all the time, the dumb supper is just something different. But if you don't like that big event, then you don't have to do, like, it doesn't always have to be a big thing. If it's something that's simple but meaningful, then totally do it. It's still as valid as that big thing. You know?
Exactly. It's that kind of reminding yourself that the efforts that you put forth because you want to are valid, even if you're the only one experiencing yeah. the benefit. And so it could be as grandiose as you want if those are the kinds of things you like, or as simple as you want if those are the kinds of things you like. I really prefer simple things, but I really do also like having a big, huge thing sometimes too. It's fun to put all of that effort and thought in for something that it's not for people. You know what I mean? It's not to get people to like you or to see you or notice you or
yeah. You know what I mean? And I think like the thought of planning, I don't know, a part, if it was like a dinner party for lots of different people without that spiritual element, for me it'd be like a drag. You know,
yeah,
but
too.
Because of that spiritual element, because like the guests, if you invite guests, that's just a bonus. That's just you wanting to share this special time with people you care about, because it's one of those things that you wouldn't want to share with strangers, because it can bring up lots of like feelings and emotions, and it can be quite a private thing. So if you are going to share it with people, they're going to be people that either you practice with, that you share a practice with, or that you are close to in some way, you know. So even if you don't like something that's big and organized, I feel that those small things that you do all the time are valid. But I
it
like
just
the
made
big
me
thing
think
too.
About like, can you do that over Zoom? And then I was like, I think that you could, because that way you forced everybody to have an actual time set aside.
Yes.
And then you are alone at a table with your computer, and then you set it for yourself. But it's the reminder that you were doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like having that. Sometimes having a group event or function on your calendar, even if you can't see the people in real life,
yeah.
is such a good reminder to allowing yourself to do the
yeah.
things you want.
And one of the things that I liked about that group of people who we did the dumb suppers with, and like kind of life gets in the way, so like work and people were like graduating and starting new jobs and all of this kind of thing, COVID hit, so we've not seen each other for a long time. But one of the things I really liked about that particular group of people, there were only four of us who'd branched off from the main moot to kind of start a working group. And what I liked about that was that because other people are waiting on you or expecting you, it does act as a push to kind of go and do the thing, because you know, everyone's got pressures on them. And I know for myself and for a lot of people, I know that, you know, you plan something and you look forward to it, but then the day arrives and I don't know, you go to work, you come home, you're tired, you've got to cook and eat food, and then like you're already tired and you're thinking about the next day's work and you think, oh, I don't want to do the thing now. But then so you stay home and you miss it, but then you realise that that time's passed anyway, and then you start feeling bad because you've missed the thing and you wish that you'd have done it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. I think we've all been there. And then it just reminds me of like how important it is for us to think about getting into communities and friendships with people that we want to be with. Because when I get stressed, like when I have a lot to do right now in the past like 6 months, I get stressed out, like because I've been doing more insular things. But there are certain things that I have on my calendar that don't give me anxiety, or like, ugh, do I have to? Like hanging out with you is one of them, like getting together for like a talking about a book. I started like a yoga teacher training, and then usually like if I have something at night on a Wednesday, I would be like, oh no, because my kids don't want me to leave this thing, that thing. But every time I walk out I don't have that anxiety. And so I'm finding the more community, the more things that I put into my life that I want to do, the easier the more enjoyable my life is. And I know we all have to do stuff we don't want to do, which I think is what causes that anxiety about doing anything else. You know what I mean? Because you're like, I already do a bunch of stuff I don't want to do. So anytime you can, like, so one of my kids, she, you know, wanted to do this thing, but it seemed a little bit weird and she didn't know anybody. And I was like, well, think about the kinds of friends you want to make. This is something that really interests you. So if you go to this thing, you're going to make friends that have the same interests as you. And I tell her that kind of stuff all the time. Like, of course you're going to be uncomfortable. You're not going to know anybody, but at least now you get to talk about something that you care about instead of listening to people talk about stuff that you don't care about.
Yeah.
And I need to, you know, hey everybody, I have to remind myself of that. And I'm reminding you of that too. Like, I just want to encourage everybody to add in the things whenever they can that they get to do, because I think like that would be one of them for me. And also, you know, you're having a dumb supper and you came home late from work and you don't have time to get ready, and or you want to wear pajamas, you could just go in your pajamas. No one can say shit. They're not allowed to talk to you. So just, you know, if you don't want to get ready, don't, just show up.
But there's lots of like other little activities. So for example, if you're beginning, or not, maybe if you've even got a practice, but perhaps you're new to spirit work or ancestor work, then like an ancestor altar is like one of the easiest things to set up, but one of the easiest things, but perhaps one of the most fulfilling as well, you know. And it needn't be anything elaborate. It can just be a simple shelf. It can, you know, if you don't want to leave something up permanently, you can, boxes, like I collect lots of boxes. I'm a bit of a box hoarder, you know, like nice tins and like nice wooden boxes. They make perfect, almost temporary altars. You can put everything inside and then close the lid and nobody knows what it is. You can set it up as you need it. But all it really needs to contain really is a candle and something perhaps belonging to or a representation of that ancestor. And then you can put on it things that they liked or just things that you want to leave to them in offering. You know, it's most simplest. That's all you really need.
Yeah. And there are a lot. And so this, like, if you don't do that, this is really a great time to start doing that, because collectively tons of cultures over the world right now are in this season.
Yes.
Are celebrating their ancestors. And so I think if you want to catch that collective energy to help you along that way of like, oh, you know, because I talk to a lot of people that say, oh, I, you know, I've been meaning to do that. I want to do that. I've been meaning to do that. this is the time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you have to be crazy and tend it all the time. Or, I mean, I mostly just do it on new moons.
Mm-hmm.
Or any special day, or if I feel like I, sometimes you're like compelled to go do stuff. But this is the time. Because, like, let's talk about then Fet Ged.
G-Day. That's how I say
it. G-Day.
But, like, G-day. You know, it's one of those things that, depending on where you are in the world, you might pronounce somewhat differently. I don't like to get too caught up on pronunciations, as we discussed earlier, because then it just detracts from the actual thing that you want to learn more about. So, it's a celebration within voodoo, whatever you want to call it. Probably most associated with Haitian voodoo, but like for me, I'm not too bound up in, oh, it's this particular branch of this particular. If you like want to do something, do it. You know, everyone has ancestors. There are many ways. And the thing is, a lot of the things that you talk about happen in lots of different cultures. So in Fet Ged Day, there's lots of processions. So you might start at the temple and you make a procession to the cemetery, where you leave offerings to obviously the guardians of the cemetery, because of course you have to pay homage to them first. They grant entry and all of that kind of thing. And then you go to the grave of your ancestor, your family member who's passed away. And it's really nice because you eat with them there at the graveside. You tend the grave, you clean it, you eat with them, you light candles, you leave offerings, you might burn cigars or cigarettes, all of those kind of things. It's a really joyous atmosphere. But poignant at the same time as well. But of course, I live in the middle of England and, you know, there is no festival of the dead for me in terms of voodoo. Because that is the G-Day are, when we talk about the G-Day, we're talking about the ancestral dead and the lowers that are associated with death. So for people who don't know, the lower are kind of intermediaries that intercede on the supreme creator's behalf with humanity. So there's a belief in a supreme creator. However, in voodoo, the belief is that that supreme creator is like so far removed from us that it's unknowable. We can't interact. And which to me makes actual perfect sense if we're thinking about some divine creator that made everything, you know. So the lower intercede on his behalf. Sometimes they represent forces of nature or psychopomps. So, for example, Papa Legba is a psychopomp. So he's also invoked in every ritual because he opens the gate. So even in Fet Ged Day, when you're at the cemetery, it's still Papa Legba that you're calling to open the way. And then...
It's like Ganesh. Every time you... You know, for like Hinduism or Vedic stuff, you always start because Ganesh is like the gatekeeper, right? Like,
yes. Yeah. So then you have, like, everyone is like probably familiar with Baron Samedi. You're like, he's the kind of lower that's almost passed into pop culture. So if people have watched the American Horror Story, Coven, however you want to pronounce that word, Papa Legba is in it, but often, like, and I'm not one of these people who gets mad at inaccuracies in shows. It's a fictional TV show, like, it's for fun, just enjoy it. But however, how Papa Legba is depicted in American Horror Story is actually, it borrows a lot from Baron Samedi. So, you know, the top hat, the cigar, that's Baron Samedi, you know. And everyone's familiar with him, but there's lots of lower that are associated with death and the cemetery. And it's these little distinctions that often can confuse people a little bit. And of course, everyone's familiar with Maman Brigitte, his wife. They're perhaps the two lower that have perhaps passed into pop culture. You know, if you've seen American Gods, they make appearances there.
Both recommended. Yeah. That season of American Horror Story was great.
Yes.
And American Gods is a really good show.
Yeah.
Neil Gaiman is a good author as well.
Yeah, one of my favorites of all time. But one of the things that I really like about the voodoo part and Fikidi is that there is kind of a lower. It's hard to explain in that. So there's Papa Gide. So he's often represents the first human who died and passed into like the afterlife, into the realm of death, whatever you want to call it. But then there's also, he can also represent the forgotten dead, you know, those ancestors that we no longer know of, or do you know what I mean?
So the people that are so far dead, so long dead.
And so I like that that part is remembered and they are honored as well.
It just reminds me of there is a cartoon that my kids really like about the Day of the Dead.
Is it that Disney one?
I don't. It's like Benicio del Toro film. I can't remember.
Okay.
And there was a guy who was, he was going to not be remembered by ancestors anymore. And so it reminded me of that, and I love the idea that, you know, that there is still a thing for you or them or spirit, you know, because I mean we've been around for a long time, you guys. people
Yeah, absolutely. And so I really like that aspect of it as well. But for me, like, obviously I live in the UK and there's not no big festival, there's no big Fikidi for me. And so what I tend to do is borrow elements from that and incorporate it into my ancestor practice that I have at this time. So for example, I'm lucky enough to live in the town where two of my grandparents and an uncle are buried, and so I go to the cemetery, which I do on a regular basis anyway, but I suppose at this time I go with more of an intent. I don't know. So I go and I leave offerings there, spend some time cleaning the graves. And they're things that anybody can do if you know where your ancestors or your family members are buried. You know, it's not set to one specific culture. Anybody can go and tend a loved one's grave or final resting place. Anybody can leave an offering of food or drink that they enjoyed in their life. These things anybody can do.
Oh my gosh, it just makes me think about the fact, so I don't have anybody that lives anywhere near me that would have been an ancestor of mine in any, because I live on the other side of the country, of everyone I've ever, all of my people. And then, you know, and so I was thinking about how there's tons of graves that aren't being tended. We need to have like an adopt a grave site
Well, the thing is that actually, you know, you say it, but in voodoo, for example, if you were to wanted to kind of honour Maman Brigitte, for example, you would find the oldest grave that belonged to a female in that grave, in that cemetery. And like, this takes some serious legwork, because like, there's a lot of old cemeteries in the UK where like the headstones are all like, you can't make out. So, you know, it's not an easy thing to do. It takes time and effort, which again perhaps makes it more special in the long run. So you find the oldest grave, the oldest female grave, and then, you know, that represents Maman Brigitte, and then you can leave her offerings there and do whatever you want to do there. So, you know.
So there's a lot of different things that you can do, even if it's not near. So like, even if you don't know your family, even if you live so far away, you can still, I mean, celebrate the death of people.
Yeah. You could go for, perhaps if your loved one lived near you, if they got a place that they liked, you could go there. If they had a favorite flower, you could perhaps create a flower bed and fill it with that flower, and then that can become your place where you go to honor them in a special kind of way. So there's lots of ways. You don't have to just, you know, because there's a lot of my ancestors, like on my dad's side of the family, that in Jamaica, and I don't know them, I don't know where they're buried. So, you know, these things shouldn't be barriers to us pursuing an in-depth relationship with our ancestors.
Yeah, and it's happening in all kinds, in like tons of cultures, right? I mean, like, it's happening in particular, we've been talking about voodoo and Haitian culture, and also, you know, Hispanic, like Mexican, Day of the Dead. And here we do have festivals for Day of the Dead because there's a huge Hispanic population where I live. But we don't have any Fete Gede celebrations. But it just goes back to that, like, so many groups of people are celebrating the dead at this time. How interesting. What about this time? You know, like, and then what you mentioned to me, the Christian Feast of the Dead. And I was like, what?
Yeah. Is that? Like, hang on, let me come salt.
Sorry, did I change topics too quickly? I'm like, I was just like kind of going on the secular stuff.
Yeah. So, Hallowtide, Hollandtide, Allentide, it's also been known at different places. All Souls Day.
All Souls Day.
You know.
Yeah. I never. Jeez, oh, Pete.
So, there's lots of things on at this time. And, you know, I think I like to celebrate some of these. So, in my local cemetery, they have like an All Souls Day celebration, and it's really beautiful. So you go in the evening and you light candles and put them in on every grave. And it's just like really, and for me, it's almost like it's not a Christian thing because it's the ancestors, it's the spirits, it's the dead. Do you know what I mean? So I know a lot of people can be turned off by, the Christian aspect of certain celebrations, but you know, for me, I like celebrating.
Yeah, but also the Christian aspect of certain celebrations are I mean, like, we just talked about celebrations from all these different places and all these different cultures, so are they originating from somewhere? You know what I mean? It goes back. And we don't always know to where, from what. And it gets changed depending on the culture that has it. But there is something about this time here.
Yeah. And I feel like it's important to mention that, like, in many folk practices, even in certain aspects of Verdun and lots of diaspora traditions, you know, you use elements of Christianity. So, for example, psalms are always used quite a lot in magical traditions. There are lots of folk spells that actually take passages from the Bible or little quotes from the Bible. There are lots of folk charms and talismans that have psalms written on them, you know, from way back, you know.
Yeah, because they're imbued with energy.
Yes.
You know? And so it's okay to use the things that, like, have been created for us and imbued with energy.
For me as well, they almost lose their so they're not, when you use those things, you're not practicing a form of Christianity. Do you know what I mean? That's not what you're doing. But they almost lose that. I don't know. They don't lose that power as such. But, you know, we were talking about before we started recording about, for me, so Christmas, for example, is a perfect example of that. So I celebrate Yule, and that for me is the spiritual side. But then I also celebrate Christmas. And for me, that's more secular. However, I also like the story of the Nativity. I like looking into the origins of all of that kind of stuff. And for me, the links to Christianity, they lose that Christian edge, kind of, because you're not practicing Christianity when you're doing them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, because you don't have to adopt an entire culture to get some of the things out of it. It's like kind of like when we talk about certain books that we like because it gave us really important information, but the author is like,
yeah,
not the best, right? Or, yeah. But you're taking some of those traditions and rituals that were created and using them outside of that,
yeah,
cultural context in which it was created.
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean? It's just picking something up and dusting it off and putting it into, yeah, your context. So it doesn't have to come with all of that.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. And of course, when we're talking about Christianity as well, I also feel that, like, it's not appropriation to do that, because Christianity is, like, the thing that was thrust upon many people. Christianity was the dominator.
it was like the thing that ate up all the other things. So, like, all of our things that our ancestors and our ancestors and our ancestors did, had, celebrated, is all been gobbled up into that. And so it's in there. It's within there. All of our traditions, our ideas. So throwing that out completely throws out all of our hints at what things were before. And we need those. We need those hints. We need those, because we can't control the fact that shit went the way it did. I have no control over that history or whatever the hell happened, but I can look at mythology and source books and take all the stuff and, like, spin it through my brain to figure out what it means to me and how I can incorporate it in my life.
Yes. And I think that's the important thing with any kind of practice or any kind of thing that you want to explore more deeply. It's important that we assimilate it. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah, I didn't grow up Hindu. And I celebrate Navratri. Durga is one of, like, the most special goddesses to me, for my goddess practice. Well, not one of the most special. I have, like, several, and they're all the most special. They're all the most special. But there is a feeling that I get when I work with Durga that is very unlike any other feeling working with different goddesses that I work with. And but I do my best to be really what is the word? I don't know, because it's still there for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I celebrate it and I honor her. I mean, I celebrate it in the way that I honor her, right? And I do things for her. But I don't – it's still – that energy is still available to me, even though I didn't grow up with that thing. I just don't like – I don't like the idea that people have to feel bad about, you know, getting into and looking into other religions. Like, yeah, Christianity is not the only one.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ancient
– Yeah, and people should explore. And, you know, I always think if you do things like with respect and you – find genuine teachers and all of that kind of stuff, there's no issue with that whatsoever. You know what I mean?
I do. And now I think we should talk about the secular fun.
Yes, because I love Halloween
this season.
Like, and most people who call themselves witches who I know also love Halloween, as in, like, the secular fun part of it. But it can be quite a contentious issue in the witchcraft community, because some people don't like it. They see it as, like, being disrespectful. But it's just a bit of fun. It is, like, secular fun. I love,
yeah,
like, horror and all of that. I love, like... can you remember the Hammer horror shows?
No.
The Hammer horror films. I loved them. They're, like, they're cheesy as anything, but they're great. Okay, and I love,
what,
like,
is that? Is that an English thing?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I always thought, like, it was a thing. I guess not.
Is it like Freddy? Is it like, or like,
they're like
Friday the 13th,
like,
kind
no,
of?
No, no, no. They're, like, older than that. They're like, So Hammer Horror, I think they're like, they were the production, I don't know if they were the production company or there was some sort of company that produced these films, that made these films, and like, they were great. I loved them. But I also love like classic horror. I'm a bit of a nerd. So like books, films, you know. So for example, last summer, I fulfilled one of my lifelong dreams of going to Whitby Abbey, because of course, you know, that's partly where Dracula is set. I walked up those, like, is it 99 steps, whatever, up to like the church, went to the beach where the ship, like, so I did all of that because I'm a proper nerd. But that's how much I love it. Like, I have a Lost Boys poster in my bedroom because, you know, this is me. I am a nerd, but I love all of that stuff. And for me, Halloween is the best time to like just do all of that shit. It's great.
I love it so much. I love that kids get, like, my kids talk about what they're going to wear for Halloween for like 3 months before Halloween and change it 100 billion times. And it's like, it's a fun activity. Like, I love taking them trick or treating, and we don't eat, I'm really annoying. I don't even let them keep the candy.
You're one of those parents.
I suck, dude. I give kids Play-Doh and stickers and pencils instead of candy. Because I know they already got too much candy. I know.
That's part of the fun. And to be fair, like, so when our kids used to do it, to be fair, Darren used to like end up eating a lot of those sweets. Like, my children are older now, so they don't do trick or treating. They get dressed up and go like uptown to like the pubs and clubs, and that's what they do now. It's so boring.
That's still so fun though.
Well, yeah, it's fun for them.
In my 20s too, I was like, this is great.
Yeah. But then I still miss them being little and doing all of that fun stuff.
Yeah. I will be like, and we always have like a pumpkin carving contest.
Yeah.
And I end up doing all of it. They like draw what they want. Like, I can't, like, now they're getting bigger.
Yeah. Did you know traditionally that instead of the pumpkin, it was a freaking turnip? Could you imagine the struggle of carving out a bloody turnip?
My kids were like, Jesus. I told them that the other day and we all laughed because my kids were like, turnips aren't that big. Like, I know. What kind of turnips did they used to have?
But you wouldn't want them to be that big. They're like, huge. They're like concrete.
Exactly. You don't let vegetables get that big. They taste bad. And I guess maybe you just kept one. You just kept growing it and growing it. It actually made me think I would like to try, because I really love carving. We have like tools that I use just for carving pumpkins so that I can like make the shading, and I get really into it. And I've been that way.
Some of them are like works of art.
Yes. And I've done that, like, you know, when I was in my 20s, I would have all of my friends over and we would have a pumpkin carving contest and we would just spend the whole day.
Are you one of those parents that don't like their kids to do it because you want it to look perfect? Because I've met some of those parents and they, have some misshapen, like,
pumpkins. I let them. Yeah. And I want them to.
Yes.
It was more of a, like, like,
but I want to do one as well.
Open and they scoop it out.
Yeah,
they're bored. Like, they're like, oh, this is taking forever. I was like, yeah, dude, I know. That's why I wanted to do it on a nice day, not in the rainy 5 p.m. You know, but they get so excited because they get the pumpkin. But I always have to do one or two for myself because I really,
It's fun.
But I do know people like that too, and I have. I'll admit, like, oh man. When you have kids and then you're like, we're going to do this art project and you have this idea in your head and then you give them paint.
Me and my sisters were kids. So can you remember the film Hocus Pocus?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, me too. Can you remember the cat? The boy who got turned into the cat, Thackeray Binns. Wow. We used to have a cat called, obviously, Thackeray Binns. And how we got that cat was my sister stole it. So my mum didn't know. She stole this cat. We didn't know if it was a stray. It was just being a street cat, because that's what cats do. And my sister's like, oh no, we found this lost cat. Let's take it home. But My mum wouldn't have let us keep it. So my sister kept it in the wardrobe for about a week, like feeding it and letting it out in the bedroom, like when my mum was at work and stuff.
So, saving it is questionable.
Yeah. So after about a week, and we've been feeding this cat in our bedroom for like a week, it obviously thinks it lives with us now. So, and then my mum's found it and she let us keep it in the end. But the funny part is, a few weeks later, my sister was just walking around the street carrying it because she was obsessed with this cat. And some random lady stopped her and said, "Oi, that's my cat." But she let my sister keep it in the end. So it just always makes me think of that story because, you know, Thackeray Binks, Hocus Pocus, Halloween. Cat stealing.
Oh, there's so many good Halloween movies.
So many.
Have you seen The New Witches?
No, but I want to.
I think it's good. I mean, I couldn't watch it with my littles because it was like Anne Hathaway as the head witch. Like her mouth, visually gets scarier than the original one with, what's that lady's name? Angelica Houston. I can't.
Yeah, something like that.
Whatever. I mean, I like her, and yeah. I didn't mean to whatever yeah. her. Like, blah blah.
They
blah.
Know who you mean.
I apologize. it was good. and so yeah, it starts with Halloween for me. Like this whole season of like, let's stay in and drink tea and it's like yeah. do crafts and
wear jumpers,
watch a movie and
light candles,
and then. Yeah, light candles. I took a walk with my daughter yesterday and we got a bunch of cedar that was fallen uh-huh. on the ground to make like a potpourri. Like I just put it on the stove with some apple cores because we have a ton of apples right now. And I'm really excited about all the – so to me, that's really Halloween-y. Did you – so, okay. I've been meaning to – I want to ask. So I grew up in Pennsylvania. And I grew up in the country, so there was like literally no other families around us. So to go trick or treating, we had to drive in to town. And so my aunt would always take us trick or treating, and we would drive into town and go and dress up. And when I was a kid, we used to go to this really tiny like coal town, like this of just. Two rows of houses, and they would make us candy apples. Like we would get yes. candy apples and homemade Rice Krispie yeah. treats. Ooh. Oh my god, popcorn balls sometimes.
We have bonfire toffee at this time of year. Oh, that is delicious.
Ugh. Oh, you and guys, then we can't do any of that stuff anymore. Like nobody will make your kids that and give it to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you guys do stuff like that when you were a kid? Is that how it was?
Yeah. Our next door neighbor, we used to have this next door neighbor called Olive, and she always used to make the best bonfire toffee ever. And I think it's just called bonfire toffee because of the time of year. Obviously we have bonfire night on the 5th of November, so I think it just coincides with that. But like you have it all through the autumn, really. Oh, it's delicious. It's so nice. It's like toffee but made, I think it's made like with molasses, and it's delicious. So nice.
What was your favorite, like what of all the things that you dressed up as when you were younger did your younger self just get so excited about? Can you
well for many people my age in the UK growing up, so it's almost like it's an Americanism, although it kind of originated here in that how big it's become. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like what you might term the commercialization of it. So when I was growing up, and I don't know if it's just because like we were poor kids off a council estate, like you had a witch's hat, often either a cheap one that you'd buy or one that you'd make. And the classic witch's costume to go with that was a black bin liner. You know, that you would like cut armholes in and a head hole. And
and now it's like so crazy. Yeah. Oh, is it like that there too?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have a Halloween store? Because we have a store that opens only for Halloween called Spirit of Halloween.
I think you probably might do in like some of the cities. So like London, Nottingham, those places, but not like in the little towns, but it's everywhere. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's in all the big supermarkets. It's in all the littler shops. It's everywhere.
Our neighbors have a full size, it's like the size of a real horse.
Wow.
A mechanical horse with its feet that go up and move. And sitting on the horse is a headless horseman holding his head.
That's amazing.
And I was like, holy shit. I mean, I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's great that they do it.
I'd keep it up in my garden all
year. It's huge. And they also have a really scary doll-like girl swinging from one of their trees. Super creepy.
Yes, that is creepy. At night.
And then the neighbors across the street from that house, I guess, you know, like now it's a competition. So it's getting pretty good on their block. I love driving past and seeing what's going on. They have a dragon skeleton.
Oh, and awesome.
That is the one I was like, I would have that. I would have a dragon skeleton in my yard. That sounds awesome. People are really into it here, which I love. I think it's so fun. And I know it got really commercial and
but it doesn't always have
blah,
to
blah,
be,
blah.
You know.
It does not.
You can make your own decorations. You can watch films with your family. There's lots of – you can do apple bobbing.
Stories.
Apple bobbing is
it's so funny because the idea of that now is gross. Sticking your face it, you know.
If I was to do it now, everyone would have to have their own individual bucket of water.
72 people would have like panic attacks.
Like, I'm the kind of person that do not like using public swimming pools. I do not like going swimming. It's just like human soup. I'm the kind of person that I'm in the swimming pool and I'm looking at all of those filthy, dirty people in there and I'm thinking, did you have a shower before you got in the pool? No.
Hell no.
I can't do it.
Like,
I can't do it.
Doing snot rockets.
No, everyone would have their individual apple bobbing buckets.
I have this one year I went and trick-or-treating and my aunt, I don't know where we got this, but somebody made it. So Cabbage Patch Kids were a thing when I was a kid.
Oh, I loved them. They were great.
somebody made a head that was supposed to look like a Cabbage Patch Kid. And it was like puffy and soft to touch, but you would put your head in it. So it was like this huge head that you put over your head.
That's
and
weird.
They like, ew, I'm going to look for the picture. Maybe it will be the like promo for this podcast. I'll try and put it up because I saw a picture of it. You know how now when you look back at pictures of Halloween costumes from from a long time ago, they look creepy as fuck. You're like, holy shit. People were really scary.
Yeah.
Now kids are running around as like superheroes. Back then, everyone looked really scary.
Yeah.
Seriously. And I saw a picture of me and that Cabbage Patch doll head that someone hand sewed. It was so scary. It reminds me of one of those pictures.
You definitely need to find that picture and share it with us all. We all want to see that.
I will. I will try and find it. So I'll never forget that. So every year, my aunt would take us trick-or-treating to this little town. My brother, me, and our two little cousins. And she was the scariest person. Not scary mean, but would tell us stories and just like do the most amazing things. And so every year she would take us trick-or-treating. And on the way home, we had to, we lived in the middle of nowhere, but we would go through these woods. I dream about these woods constantly because I spent so much of my life there. But it was dark. There's no, there's no streetlights.
Yeah, yeah.
We're in the middle of nowhere. And I swear this happened every year, and every year it was scary. and we'd be driving through the woods, and then the car would just shut off. And then my aunt and uncle would be like, oh my God, you guys. Oh my God. And then so we would pull onto the side of the road and the lights would go out and then we would be sitting in the dark. And and then you would hear this scratching sound, screech, screech. And my aunt would be like, oh my God. Because earlier in the day she had told us that Hookman got out. I forgot that part of the story. Like when we were going trick-or-treating, she was telling us about Hookman, like totally got out of prison. And so we're sitting in the forest at night on a shitload of candy in the back of a car, and you hear the screeching. And she's like, oh my gosh, you guys, I think it's Hookman. And she had this elaborate setup every year to scare the shit out of us. And even though you knew it was coming, yeah, it totally worked. So I'll think of that every – I don't do that to my children. But I do love the – I remember that. So I hope that everyone listening today gets a really good in a fun way, something a little scary for Halloween, getting that in there. And so celebrate, if you want, the secular holiday for the fun of it. And also, we talk so much about all of the non-secular things and, you know, getting your ancestor veneration on.
Yes. Yeah. There's room for everything. Do it all. Do everything.
Do it all.
For me, Halloween and Samhain is the month. It's not just a day.
Yeah, I mean, and like, yeah, and it is not just October, because a lot of it is in November as well. So it's
there's plenty of time to do something.
Yeah, like a lot of people say 'tis the season for Christmas, but really a lot of us, you and I, 'tis the season, and we are talking about this one.
Yes.
So 'tis the season to have fun, you guys. Anything else that we need to talk about, Emma?
I don't think so, apart from check out our website. We've got a few events on there. So Lilith's Left Hand, there's going to be a book club, and that's always going to be the fourth Sunday of every month. The next one is the Kybalion. That's what we're going to be looking at. So please join us for that. But all the details are on the website, so please do check that out. Jessica's worked so hard on it, and it looks beautiful.
Yes, I'm not good. I mean, I have never done website stuff before, and now I get to play with it. So thank you for saying that. It's kind of fun, and I hope you guys come and look. And I want to do fun community stuff with anybody out there that wants to do it. So if you want to read a book and then come and talk to us about it, I can't wait to meet you.
Same. How exciting.
All right. Happy season to everybody. I'll talk to you later, friends.
Happy Halloween.
Bye.
Open your mind.